The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. We are going to roll out the Mega Playoff Podcast for Round 1. I am very excited. Four very confusing Round 1 games. Actually, three of them are confusing. One is not. We have a bunch of guests coming up. We're going to spread this over two parts so your MPEG file or whatever it's called is not too long. On the line first from the NFL Network and NFL.com, the next GM of either the Indianapolis Colts, St. Louis Rams, or the nine other teams that have GM spots, Mike Lombardi. What's happening?
Hi, Bill. How are you? Yeah. There's about 19 vacancies. It's like Ocean City, New Jersey in February.
Just name the team and I'll start the campaign. I want to be your campaign manager.
I love that. I would. It's always so difficult to figure out exactly what the teams are actually, if they have openings or if they're looking for someone or what kind of person they are. So I don't know. I don't have enough data to really know how to run the campaign. I don't want to end up like Herman Cain and just have to bow out before it begins. So
I would say Chicago is the scariest job because they have the fans that will just, you know, will egg your house and do all that kind of stuff. They really care as much
Bill,
as
I work
any
for Al
famous.
Davis. Nothing could scare you.
Oh, that's a good
Nothing
point.
Could
your condition.
Scare you.
See, your condition for that Bears job.
I mean, you know, when you've entered that arena, there's nothing that could possibly scare. Egging the house would be a welcome addition. That wouldn't be too bad. But, you know, look,
I think
the jobs that are attractive are the ones that have quarterbacks. That's the one.
Yes.
The one thing when you drive to the stadium on Sunday morning, hoping to win or lose or preparing to win or lose, you know that if you don't have a quarterback, the chances of winning are few and far between. So when you have that, it's an easier drive in the morning.
Well, I'm rooting for you, and I agree with you. Go to where the quarterbacks are. That's what all the wise people do. Cutler is in play. The Manning-Luck combination is in play. Even Sam Bradford, who I'm not even sure is that good, he's in play. But, yeah, you don't want to roll out Jake Delhomme as your year one starter. Speaking of Jake, he might be involved in round one. We're not sure. They're saying T.J. Yates is going to start and that he's healthy and all that. Houston, people seem to think Cincy can beat Houston, even though Cincy has only beaten one team that was over 500, which was Tennessee, who finished 9-7 and really should have finished 8-8. Why are people so anxious to just dismiss this Houston team?
I don't know. And, you know, I mean, Houston beat them at home in a game that really Cincinnati needed to win, and Cincinnati couldn't win the game. And, you know, they had their opportunities. Cincinnati's a funny team. When you look at them, you think, boy, they've got so much going for them. And as we watched them play Baltimore, there was a moment in the game where you thought they had control of the game and they were going to win that game. And then
yep.
For whatever reason, they have not been able to break through that veneer of winning tough, close games. They just haven't done it. They haven't had a Tebow experience yet. And
yeah.
And that's really what hurts them. I think when they get into a fourth quarter game and it's close, they fold up. I don't see them beating any good team. And so to me, everybody thinks, well, Houston, this is easy. They get eliminated round one. I don't think that. I think Houston's can match up. I think T.J. Yates will throw the ball effectively on them. And look, the Ravens beat the Bengals last week really just running one play. They ran the zone play with the lead back. I mean, Flacco didn't throw for very many yards. They didn't make any plays in the passing game, and they ran two runs.
And we watched the games together on Sunday. Both of us were really unimpressed by Andy Dalton because he did have time for that entire game. He just didn't make the throws.
Exactly. I mean, he had more than enough time to make throws, and he just really didn't have a chance. He didn't do the things that, you know, quarterbacks do. You kept waiting for him to throw the ball, whether it was to A.J. Green. I mean, A.J. Green and Jerome Simpson were targeted 20 times in the game. They only had seven catches between the two of them.
Yeah.
And so you've got to feel like he's got to make plays. They have these weapons that you look at on paper and say, geez, this should be a really good team. But then in reality, they don't do enough to make you – they don't beat anybody good. And to me, building camaraderie, building chemistry, building confidence comes from winning close games, and that's the Bengals haven't done.
And also, we noticed in that game, Marvin Lewis played that game not to lose instead of playing to win, which I don't – and that's something that he's done throughout his coaching career. And you're not going to win in Houston if you're not going to – be the riverboat gambler kind of approach. I don't. You can't play conservative and win a playoff game. I don't see him doing it. Do you see it?
No, I don't. And I think if a game's close and it's got to be managed well in the fourth quarter, Marvin leaves something to be questioned. So,
well, the flip side, we have Kubiak though.
Well, but Kubiak really is going in with a limited play sheet. I mean, look, Kubiak has got to legislate against himself in this game, and I think he should have learned a lesson against the Colts when he played them up there that he needs to give T.J. Yates a little bit more leeway, and certainly that'll come with Andre Johnson being on the field and allowing him to do some things, but he's not going to be able to win the game just running bootlegs and the zone play. He's going to have to do a little bit more than that. So hopefully he can expand this and give T.J. Yates an opportunity to play in the game. I mean, the battle of rookie quarterbacks, you would think the one who's more seasoned, obviously with 16 starts under his belt, should do it. But to me, I get the sense Yates can move this offense and throw the ball effectively.
The Pittsburgh-Denver game, a lot of similarities to Saints-Seattle last year. The team that's been, you know, sometimes has a really good advantage at home. That no, everybody is counting out. The line is going to be for, I think the line for that Saints game is 10.5. For this game, it's going to be around the same. Nobody's giving the home team a chance. It's a classic nobody believed in us game. Should anybody believe in the Broncos in this game?
You know, when you break down the Bronco Steeler game and you look at what's happened to the Broncos the last 3 weeks, I think the strength of their team, Von Miller, Elvis Dumervil, is no longer the real strength. And the reason why is because the Patriots, the Bills, and to some degree the Chiefs have played a nickel style of game, and that's made those two players play with their hand in the dirt and have to handle the offensive tackles on 60 to 70 plays, which they're so small they wear down. And the longer the game goes, the longer the season goes, their effectiveness becomes less and less. So Von Miller's not playing nearly as well as he did 6 weeks ago when they were humming and before he hurt his wrist. So the strength is no longer there. Pittsburgh's strength is throwing the football. Pittsburgh's strength is Ben Roethlisberger running around making plays and breaking tackles in the pocket, which I think he'll do, and they can score. They can get this game into the 20s, and I just don't see where the Broncos can find 20 points unless they break a long run, unless Pittsburgh turns the ball over. I think it's going to have to be Pittsburgh loses, not Denver wins.
Oh, I like that approach. Everybody's blaming Tebow for how bad the Broncos offense was the last couple weeks. Is there – I mean, certainly there's no playoff team with worse receivers than this team. Was there any NFL team that had worse receivers than this team?
Well, you know, it's hard to judge these receivers in this passing game because it's so much a one-dimensional route game. There's not a lot of things that happen. They're always trying to run a trick play in a sense. They're always trying to throw it up the field. There's no real rhythm passing game. There's no sense of making the coverages have to change. They get rolled coverages on every play. It's man-to-man, and Tebow holds the ball a little too long, and he never throws the ball into a tight window to see if these guys can make a play on it. You know, oftentimes, like Dwayne Bowe is covered, but he makes plays, so his numbers look pretty good, even though oftentimes he is covered. So it's very difficult to judge these receivers. I mean, when you have Tebow a quarterback, you need big receivers so they can stalk block and have the running game. But when Denver doesn't make a play down the field or get behind the defense, that's really when they struggle. In Minnesota, they were able to make loose plays. He was able to run around, and it brought the passing game in. But since then, teams haven't let him do it.
So Pittsburgh, if you're making a case against them, you would say that it's just been one of those years. They've been snake bitten. It's like just this guy gets hurt, this guy gets hurt, this guy's banged up, this guy's playing hurt. Can you pass a point of no return and have the Pittsburgh Steelers done that?
Oh, you know, you know, losing Mendenhall hurts them because they want to be a nickel team, and the nickel back really helps the receivers. You have to load the box a little bit. So the injuries have mounted against Pittsburgh, but to me, they're still one of the best five seeds in a long time, and I still think they have the elements of, when you break down all the AFC teams, they're probably the most complete team. Their offense is better than, to me, is better than Baltimore's. Their defense is as good. Their defense is better than New England, but their offense isn't quite as good, but it's good. So to me, they still, even with the injuries, they still, like, they're the best team in the AFC, even though they're the 5 seed.
If you're Pittsburgh, who do you rather want to play in round? Who would you rather want to play in round two? Would you rather go to Baltimore, or would you rather go to New England?
Well, I mean, they've already beaten the Baltimore. They've already beaten New England, so I think they'd rather go up there. I think knowing New England's defense has struggled the last season, they have to feel very comfortable that they can score with New England. And the way they play defense against New England in the past, New England has always been their kryptonite. But now, I think after beating them, especially after New England had a 2-week bye to get ready for them, they beat them in their home stadium. I think there's a sense of confidence. I think they'd rather go to New England.
Don't you think, though? Look, I'm not making excuses for my Pats, and Lord knows I don't believe in this defense, and I'm just going to enjoy the ride this year. I have very low expectations. It's hard for me to imagine they could win a Super Bowl with this defense. I hope they do. I'm going to enjoy it if it happens. But if you're the Pats, though, the Steelers beat the crap out of you in that game, obviously, but they did it partly by the element of surprise. They totally changed what they always did on defense in that game. And I think if they just really caught the Patriots by surprise, the game got out of hand, whatever, they're not going to catch them by surprise this time. How do you think their defense would play the Patriots in that game?
I think they're going to play them exactly the same way, and they're going to hope that they can cover. They're going to hope Ike Taylor can play as effectively as he did, and they're going to feel like with Lamar Woodley healthy and James Harrison healthy, they can put more pressure on Brady, and they could create, force him to hold the ball that extra tenth of a second against man coverage and not put it in the tight windows. And they're going to feel like they can really clamp down on Pittsburgh, on New England's receivers, and just take the same approach, but with added players in it, make it better. They didn't have Harrison the last time they played him. And they had Timmons playing on the outside. And then Woodley gets hurt in the game, and they still won.
This didn't work out well for the Patriots, because if Houston takes care of business at home, which, they're favored by 3, and I think if you're going to bet your life on that game, you'd take Houston. And then all of a sudden you have Pittsburgh coming to New England. That's not a prize for the 1 seed, because Pittsburgh's one of the 5 best teams in this tournament. Let's go to the NFC quickly. Oh, go ahead.
Quickly here, I think the key is this is very reminiscent of the Tennessee team that came to New England on a Saturday night. You know, Drew Bennett drops that ball. That Tennessee team could have easily gone to the Super Bowl. That was the game that was, to me, that was the deciding game in the AFC. Whoever won that game was going to the Super Bowl. And I think this game, if Pittsburgh goes to New England, I think that'll be the deciding game for the Super Bowl in round one.
That was Vinatieri's best kick, the 48-yarder I think it was like the minus 30 wind chill or whatever. The ball was a rock. I still don't know how he kicked that. We won the game because of that kick. Let's go to the NFC quick. 2 really good NFC games. I think both of these games are significantly better than the AFC games. First one, the 3 seed against the 6, Saints-Lions. Everybody seems to think this game's going to be a 50-45 type final, reminiscent of that Green Bay Arizona game a couple years ago. This isn't the way to beat the Saints in a shootout, is it?
No, not in the dome. I mean, you got to get, if you're going to play them and you want to up tempo them, get them on grass, get them outside, and then try your luck there. But I think the style to beat the Saints is to play slow ball, is to not snap the ball until the 25-second clock's down to 1 second, regardless of whether you want to throw it or not. I think you have to try to reduce the game as much as possible. You've got to put as much pressure on them as you possibly can in terms of keeping the game as close as you can until the fourth quarter and then see where you go from there. But if you try to get in a track meet with them, I mean, Chris Collinsworth had the best line of all. He said, you know, every time we do a Saints game in the Superdome, you know, I'm looking for stories by the middle of the second quarter. And, you know, he's right. And so you've got to find a way to extend the game. I think the challenge for Detroit is, can they play not 60 minutes of great football, of defensive football, but can they play 35 minutes of great defensive football?
Mm. Thank you for laying that all out without mentioning Super Bowl 42. I really appreciate it, because that was the Giants game plan against the 07 Pats. And it does seem like that's the game plan to beat either the Saints or the Packers this year.
It's the formula you have to play when you're playing against a high-octane team. You've got to find a way to gain a possession. You've got to find a way to reduce the game. And you've got to really do a good job on all your third and shorts. You have to almost spend a week of preparation on third and short because you want to be able to convert those key downs. Like, we're watching Cincinnati play Baltimore, and how many times was I screaming in the corner about Cincinnati's inability to convert to third and one?
Yeah.
And when you play a good team, you got to do that.
They did not have, and this is why I don't like them as a playoff team, they don't have that possession guy, Cincinnati, that guy that, you know, the Patriots can go to Gronkowski or Hernandez at any point, or Welker on third and three, and they have three options, basically. The Saints, everybody in that team is an option. The Bengals don't really have that guy, and I gotta be honest, I'm not sure the Lions do either.
No, they don't, and that's the problem. I mean, really, Matthew Stafford's had an incredible season, but his third down has been very, very disappointing. And for all the yards he's gained this year throwing, he would even have more if he could convert some third downs. There was a stretch there during, you know, the Dallas situation when they lost to San Francisco during that losing streak where they really struggled to convert third downs, and it became a problem because they don't have a back that they can give the ball to when they spread you out. You're not worried about them running the ball out of spread formation, so you can take away some of the receivers, and then they don't have that crafty Lance Moore, Wes Welker-type guy to win on the inside on an option route, and they don't have a halfback who can run an option route as well. So Lenihan has done a nice job, the offensive coordinator of the Lions, of trying to mask their problems, but they always kind of creep up in key games and at key times.
Well, meanwhile, the Giant fans right now are nodding and salivating because they have the right kind of team to beat the Saints and or the Packers. Do you believe in this Giants team?
I believe in their defensive front, and I think when OCU Manor is back playing, I think it obviously enhances all their other good players. Strength builds on strength, and that's what happens with the Giants is when Umanora is back and they can put Jason Pierre-Paul all over the place and Justin Tucks all over, now they can create the matchups that really become a problem for bad offensive lines, and they can take advantage. If Atlanta doesn't play with the lead in this game, they got a chance to be run out of the house. Atlanta can't get into a drop-back pass game against the Giants, even though it would be tempting to do it because the Giants' secondary is so poor. But the Falcons' offensive line doesn't match up to the Giants' defensive front. So you have to be very careful about throwing the ball. They need to slow the game down too. And they also need to run the ball, and they need to keep the game, they need to play from in front. And if the Giants win, which I suspect they will, then Green Bay goes there. And I think the Giants have to hope for a bad weather day and make it a trench game and make it a shorter game and take their luck that way.
Yeah, but we all know with this Giants team, the worst thing that can happen to them is anybody thinking that they should win a game. That's usually when it turns on them. They need like that doubt. I hope the Giants fans are doing a good job fanning the flames of doubt this week for the Falcons. Oh, we can't match up with their receivers. They gotta start staying that stuff. Cause if Tom Coughlin and Eli and these guys think they can actually win, that's not good. But going to the Giants for a second. This Victor Cruz thing, just explain, take 30 seconds to explain how this happens. How does this guy not get drafted and now becomes, in my opinion, the most explosive under 6'2 receiver in the league?
It happens all the time, and people yell at me because I say don't draft a receiver. Receivers are the most misevaluated position in football, because in college football, the game is nothing that resembles the pro game. In college football, there's all free releases. So it's like us playing in the backyard. You know, you run down here, take a right. There's no bump and run coverage. You're just going down there, and you're either open because of the air or you're open. You know, you can get into your route easily. So it's very difficult for scouts to really get a good handle on a receiver when he's in bump and run coverage. It's very few teams play it in college football. So there's so many mistakes. And then the small school guys with the level of comp kind of get dismissed. The University of Massachusetts playing in New Hampshire, really, you know, he caught 50 balls, but how many did he really catch? You know, it was an offense that was predicated in a different direction. So I think that's why receivers are so hard to judge. And good ones are hard to judge as well, because you don't get to see them against top level. And then the corners backs they're going against isn't of the highest talent level as well. So very difficult. And that's why you see so many of them come through the ranks and you're able to find them. And then the development of the receivers becomes difficult as well. Are they able to learn? Can they think on their feet? Can they move on their feet and do all those things? I think it becomes a challenge. And that's where so many people make mistakes.
You're the Giants GM. You could only protect Victor Cruz or Hakeem Nicks next year. You lose one of them. Who do you pick?
Probably pick Cruz. Cruz is crafty. I think, you know, receivers are, as I've said to you many times, receivers are like a basketball team. You have to have different styles for every receiver. You can't have four the same. And Cruz gives you that point guard penetrating small off guard that can create separation instantly that makes it very difficult to press. I like Hakeem Nicks. I think he's got inconsistent hands at times, but he's got great hands. You know, when he's catching the football, he's got incredible hands, but oftentimes he drops a few that he shouldn't. And his initial escape isn't always great because he's a big guy and he builds speed. He's an effective player, but, you know, I think Cruz gives you instant success right away off the line of scrimmage.
Would you put him above Welker right now?
I think he's getting close. Welker's still, to me, dynamic in his ability to you know, Welker's now, he's like the basketball player who can pump fake and get a shot off. You know, probably 2 years from now, the pump, and nobody's going to go for the pump fakes anymore. And but he's so crafty, and his hesitation and his instant stop and start ability makes it so difficult. And, you know, people say, well, if he gets on a grass field, he won't be as effective. I actually think the turf up there is sometimes so slippery, he slips. We saw it the other day against the Buffalo Bills. He slipped a few times. But I think Welker's, you know, it's that instantaneous quickness that he has that makes him so difficult.
I think this Giants team is really interesting because they can do two things really well. This is why I picked them against the Cowboys last week. They can rush the passer. They can throw the ball. You know that in any game they play, they're going to do those two things. Pretty interesting combination. I mean, it always means they're in any game, and it always means if they have a lead, they can protect it with their front four. And if I'm Green Bay, and Rodgers really hasn't played since, what, week 16? They have this banged-up offensive line. They have high expectations. I'm a little afraid of that game, right?
Plus, you know that the Giants are good. If they play you one time, they'll come back and play a different way. I mean, I think they learned something when they played the Patriots the first time before the Super Bowl. And I think that now if they had to go play them again, you know, to me, Jordy Nelson is the real issue. And I think the Giants would be a lot smarter the next time they played them, if they get there, is to not put their worst corner on Jordy Nelson. To me, Jordy Nelson requires your best corner. You're going to double Jennings no matter where he is on the field. So you double Jennings. You're going to put your best corner. Hopefully he can shut down Jordy Nelson because that's the guy that causes you the most problems with his deep ability, with his playmaking talent. And then you take your chance on Driver and you kind of give a man and a half to Finley, which means you put a safety on him and have a linebacker help in and out on him so he doesn't really get going, and you reroute him on every single play. And then force McCarthy to have to call some runs and see how the game goes. Because every time McCarthy calls a run, he's not going to score a touchdown. He's not going to make an explosive play, and the clock's going to keep running, which is in your favor.
If you had to pick an upset, Atlanta or Detroit, which team would you pick?
I would go Atlanta because Atlanta's going to gain some confidence. They're going to put the Redskins game on there, and they're going to watch the Redskins run the ball effectively on them. They're going to watch the Redskins convert 50% on third down against the Giants, and they're going to feel like we've got a better offensive line than the Redskins. We've got better receivers than the Redskins. We've got a better quarterback than the Redskins. Why can't we beat them? And so I think there's a sense of confidence when you watch them play the Redskins.
Let's say you and I were arguing about whether the Falcons are frauds, and I was – maintaining steadfastly that the Falcons were frauds. What would you say to talk me out of that?
I think the Falcons are frauds when they can't control the tempo. I think if the Falcons can run the football effectively and they don't think that they're the greatest show on turf and they try to decide who they are as a football team and basically run the ball, keep it close, play action pass, keep Matt Ryan from having to throw it 40 times, I think they're not frauds. When they play their style, they're not a fraud. When they get out of their style and they think that they become the greatest show on turf and think they can throw it, I think it becomes a real issue.
Did they do anything in 2011 to make you think they can win this game?
The Falcons?
Yeah.
No.
So
no,
one game that jumps to mind that makes you think, oh, well, they, at least in that game they did this, and that makes me think they can win this.
No, I really don't. I mean, the Falcons are a team that now they've even started to lose a little bit at home, which they never had done in the past. Yeah. They never were a great road team. But, you know, now to me they still have some situations. I think people know who they are and how to play them. And I think they've got some real issues defensively as well. I mean, if they don't rush the passer, if John Abraham doesn't have a great game, you know, they have a difficult time slowing anybody down, especially, you know, teams that have more than one good receiver.
So it sounds like for Super Bowl purposes, you like Pittsburgh, you like New England, you like New Orleans, you like Green Bay. Would you throw Baltimore into that mix?
I don't like Baltimore's offense, especially if they have to, especially in close games. I know they're 8-0 at home, but I think they're going to play a game in the playoffs here where it's going to be a little difficult. Now, they could get the lucky draw. They could get Houston again up there with T.J. Yates, and I think that becomes, now they're in the championship game and maybe hosting Pittsburgh if Pittsburgh's able to beat the Patriots. But, you know, so I think they get themselves a lucky draw. But I just don't have enough confidence in the Ravens' offense. I think they're so generic, they're so basic that if their defense, and look, watch the Cincinnati tape. Cincinnati was able to throw the ball on them effectively. Watch the San Diego tape. When you can protect against the Ravens, you can throw the football.
I was most interested that they really couldn't pressure Dalton in that game. I thought they would be swarming him, and they weren't. And then Flacco never had to even make a play in that game, and they were still able to win. At some point in the playoffs, he's going to have to make some plays. We never even mentioned the 49ers. You know, this is probably going to play out. They're going to probably, barring a major upset, the Saints will go there in round two. West Coast, outdoors, little windy. See, you know, you mentioned before the blueprint for beating the Saints. Seems like the 49ers could do that. Slow the game down, running game, just try to convert those third and threes. Why couldn't the Saints beat the Niners beat the Saints?
Oh, they can. I think they clearly can. I think it's going to be tough for them to do that style two games in a row, beat the Saints in an up-tempo game, slow it down, then go beat Green Bay the same way. But they know the formula. And the one thing the 49ers do as well as anybody is they know who they are. They don't kid themselves into thinking they're somebody different. They don't try to be outside the box. They don't try to think all of a sudden they're going to try to throw it 50 times. They know who they are. They have a good handle on who they are, and they're competitive. And I think they feel like if they get the Saints on grass, outdoors, you know, with a little wind and candlestick, and it makes Drew Brees not be so pinpoint precise with the football, they'll have a chance.
And also, that's a classic Harbaugh game. That's a classic Jim Harbaugh. I am a really good coach, and I got my team all kinds of fired up to shut down this red-hot Drew Brees and this greatest offense, all this crap. We're going to beat the crap out of him. You guys are going to do this. And then they win, you know, 19-17 or some weird score. But couldn't you see that? Like, that would be the game that puts him on the map, I feel like. Not that he's not ready.
And I think that basically Harbaugh does a great job of utilizing, look, nobody's even talking about us right now. I mean, we're talking the Saints, we're talking the Packers, we're talking the Giants, you know, we're talking the Patriots, the Steelers, the Ravens, but nobody even mentions us, and we're just as good. And he uses that to a full advantage, you know, and look, we're riding underneath the carpet. We're a great team. We can go in there and beat them, and he'll have his team believe and they can win. Because, look, every close game they've had to play in this year, they've won. Unlike the Bengals, who can't win a close game and have no confidence in close games, The 49ers believe they can win all close games.
So Saints or, I'm sorry, 49ers or Giants, if you had to back one as a surprise Super Bowl team, who would it be?
49ers.
It's pretty interesting.
Because the 49ers are like the Giants in the sense their front seven is very dominant. They can rush the passer. They can't cover anybody in the back end, but it's hard to get the ball off on them. And the 49ers' style of offense is different than the Giants. They have to control the ball with play action pass and runs, where the Giants need Eli to make a lot of plays in the passing game, and Bradshaw needs to be on the field to help their spread offense.
All right, so what's your pick, Super Bowl?
I would say Pittsburgh-Green Bay, repeat of last year.
Oh, that's what I picked before the season. Excellent. And if you had to pick one underdog to pull off a major upset in round one, it would be the Atlanta Falcons, I'm guessing?
It would be the Falcons.
But you don't feel good about it?
I mean, well, I don't feel great about it, but I mean, when you lose to the Redskins twice, and I picked the Redskins to win the East because I thought they would be much better than they were offensively, but when you lose to the Redskins in a game you have to win, I think there's always an element of inconsistency within your team, and it could creep up at any time.
Mike Lombardi, the next GM of the Indianapolis Ram Bears. Congratulations on being in charge of all three of those teams. I look forward to being your VP of Common Sense. We'll talk to you next week, and also we can watch you on NFL Network, and we can read on NFL.com all of your playoff columns, right?
And Inside the NFL on Showtime. Hopefully I'll be on this week.
Inside the NFL on Showtime. Forgot about that one. Thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
All right, let's bring in the editor-in-chief of ESPN the magazine and a degenerate gambler like myself. He has his ears wired on the Vegas scene. He's here right now. You can read him on the Insider on ESPN.com every week. I don't know how he has time to write this stuff. Chad Millman, what's happening?
How you doing, buddy?
You know, trying to figure out, it's anytime you see four favorites that look pretty obvious in round one staring at you, you know that's not how it's going to play out. What underdog do you like?
Well, you know, it's funny. Before Joe Mead pressed play, we were just talking about the Broncos, and that game's already been bet up from 7.5 to 8. And I just sort of feel like in the altitude, you know, we were just talking about before Joe Mead pressed play again, we're talking about Ryan Clark is definitely not going to play. Ben Roethlisberger is injured. Mendenhall isn't playing. This has the makings to me of a classic opportunity to come in and make a little bit of money on the Broncos covering in garbage time. I mean, it's you know, it probably won't happen. They will get blown out because I think defenses, especially the Steelers, they are so good. They have figured out how to defend against Tim Tebow, and when Tim Tebow is turning the ball over, they are not a team that can keep themselves in the game. But in the altitude, you just never know what's going to happen if your team isn't at 100%. And in the altitude against Tim Tebow's faith, I think that there's opportunity there for some garbage covers.
Here's where we have for the lines right now. I'm looking at sportsbook.com, which is usually pretty accurate. They have Bengals by 3. All right, Bengals getting 3 in Houston. Yep. I don't think that's going to move all week. Saints 11 at home against Detroit. I think that's going to stay right or might go to 11.5. That's it. Giants 3, Falcons. That doesn't move all week. Might go to Giants 3.5 at game time, maybe. I think the Steelers-Broncos line, it started, I think, at 7.5. It's up to 9 on sportsbook.com. Jeez. I think it gets the double figures by Sunday. What do your Vegas sharps think? Where does that line end up?
Well, I'm shocked it's already at 9. I think there is going, you're right, it probably will get to 10 because there is no difference between 9 and 10. So you might as well, bookmakers might as well, if they keep getting money on the Broncos, they might as well go up to 10. But I think there's an opportunity for a buyback there at some point, just because there's too many things going against the Steelers, and that is almost entirely about the Broncos losing to Kyle Orton 7-3. And it's about the Broncos losing the week before that. And it's about the Broncos losing to the Patriots. It's about everyone thinking, okay, the Broncos have been figured out. And so that's where the money is coming from. But at some point, there's no value there. And so there's going to be sharps buying it back. Whether or not they buy it back in big enough volume that it ends up moving the number off of 10 if it eventually gets there, because all the public is going to come in on the Steelers. But I certainly think there's an opportunity there if it gets to that number.
Let's deconstruct these lines because, both you and I are fascinated by the concept of value.
Yeah.
And in that Steelers-Broncos game, the line probably should be 7. But yet they know they can get 10 because nobody believes in this Denver team.
Exactly.
And nobody wants to be stuck getting 7.5 points or 8 points in the game's 20-0 in the third quarter and Tebow's bouncing passes.
Exactly.
So you're getting an extra 3.5 points with that line, whatever it ends up. The funny thing is, I don't want it. I'll bet Pittsburgh up to 14. I don't care. I don't want to take this Denver.
Well, that's the thing is, you don't have to bet it either. If you don't think there's value there, that's the idea of value betting. You don't think there's value there? Walk away. That's how the wise guys end up being wise guys, and that's what separates them from being gamblers who don't have any money in their pocket. Is they see a line, if they don't see there's any value, they walk away. And so, you know, if it's up at 9 at Sportsbook, you know, Sportsbook is very much a retail shop. So they're not getting a ton of sharp action at their lines. So if they're at 9 right now, then that's almost entirely public action. That's guys like you and me who don't know any better, who are squares, who are going to bet because we think the Steelers are going to kill Tim Tebow. If the books across the strip and at the sharp books offshore end up getting to 9 or 10, then I think that's a real indication that the sharps just think that the Broncos have absolutely no chance whatsoever in this game.
I'm on Vegas, Vegas Insider right now. They have the Las Vegas Hilton has Steelers by 8.
Yep.
The Mirage has it at 8.5.
Most places I looked right before I came on had it at, eight.
Wait, what's Leroy's?
Leroy's Sportsbook?
Oh, didn't know there was a Leroy's Fight
Oh, man, it's, Leroy's is huge.
I want a t-shirt.
Leroy, you can get a t-shirt. They have a good contest. Leroy's was started by a guy who used to be a dentist, and then he just got bought by William Hill last year.
That's great. Yeah. I love that there's a Leroy's sports book. Everybody's at 3 for Atlanta Giants. Everybody's at 3 for Cincy Houston. And then Detroit, the Mirage is up to 11 for New Orleans. Everybody else is 10.5.
And the Mirage, the Saints are at 11 at Chris, which is a big sharp book, at Olympic, which is a sharp book offshore. Chris is at 7.5 on the Steelers and the Broncos. And Olympic is minus 9, but the juice is plus 100. So they're trying to entice people to take that minus 9.
Here's the second real value that I'm seeing just from the public thinking something's going to happen, so it's higher than it should be. The over-under for Lions Saints is 59.
Yeah, that's crazy.
A lot of points. That basically means 34-27. 33-30.
It's like a huge number.
That's the kind of score that has to beat that. That's about 4 points too high, right?
It is the highest wild card total ever. And it got, and it opened as the highest wild card total ever. And it got bet up. It opened at 58. Then it went to 58.5. You're telling me you're seeing some 59s out there. It's a huge number. It's a huge, huge number. This is what was interesting to me though. So the Saints this year had 8 games of totals of 50 or more. Mm-hmm. The overs went 6-2 in those games. They played the Lions, you know, about a month ago in early January. I think the total in that game, what was that game? You know what? I can't remember what the total was in that game, but it ended 31-47, so it was at 48. But the last 3 weeks, I mean, Drew Brees, how can you bet against him being on the total? And how can you bet against the Saints? You know, that's why this number has moved up so much. They've won, I think, 9 straight against the spread all season long. The story of the season had been how the 49ers had been dominating against the spread. They were not a team you wanted to bet against. There was one point in the season where I think they were 10-1-1. And yep. They finished the season 11-4-1. So in the last 3 games, they're 1-3. Who ends up with the best against the spread record in the NFL this year? The New Orleans Saints at 12-4. They were at 3-4.
I was going to say they did 9 straight.
Yeah, 9 straight. So, I mean, that to me right now is the most interesting story that's happening in sort of the playoffs as far as the spread is concerned. And there's a guy who I did some stuff with this year named Warren Sharp, who I know some very sharp bettors, no relation to his last name, are following, and especially for his totals. So before I was coming on, I asked him to send me some stuff. And he made the point that 3 non-Super Bowl playoff games since 2002 have been totaled above 51 points, and all 3 went over, and the home team covered in all 3. And New Orleans was one of those teams. I think that was 2007 against the Cardinals when they
Was Arizona Green Bay one of those games?
I can't remember the other game. No,
that one?
It wasn't.
That was 52-45.
It was Indianapolis and somebody.
Oh, okay.
And I can't remember who the other person was.
So you're saying, like, maybe that line's not overvalued.
Well, I think 58 is a lot. I think 58.5 is a lot. And I think 59 is a ton. And I think that it wouldn't be surprised. I've already spoken to a couple guys who have told me that they're hoping this number continues to go up, because then they're going to fade it, you know, as it gets later in the week. And the Saints are one of those teams, you know, in the same way that people are looking at the Broncos and fading the Broncos. And that's why that number, especially in square shops like Sportsbook, is going up, and it's much higher. It's a point higher than it is at some of the sharper books and some of the books on the strip where they can get some sharp action. I think that number is going to continue to go up because people have seen Drew Brees throw for 20 touchdowns and 3 interceptions the past 4 games and score 45 points a game and, you know, go 85 yards in 2 plays with 15 seconds left and score a touchdown. And they're going to bet the over. And that's a number that a lot of people in the zeitgeist are talking about right now. And, you know, totals don't get as much conversation as sides do, but this is a number that is so high that people are continually talking about it. So I wouldn't be surprised if it gets to the 59.5 point, if people start fading it. And then it's just a question of, did you get it at its highest point before you did start to fade it?
Who was the winner of 2011's most public team award? Was it Denver?
Well, you know, at the end of the year, it had to be the Saints, but because they were winning nine in a row and they were getting so much money, and those numbers, and they were covering in a ridiculous way. But, you know, certainly I don't think Denver was a public team in the same way that, say, the Packers are a public team. You know, I mean, the Packers lines, they had multiple double digit lines this year. So they can't be anybody throughout the entire year except for the Packers.
Well, but it seemed like the Broncos just were getting the benefit of the doubt with these lines. Even last week against the Chiefs, and I took them. They were 3 or 3.5, and there was really no reason to believe that they had a better team than the Chiefs. I mean, even this week,
there is no reason to believe they had a better team than the Chiefs. There is no reason to believe they have a better team than the Steelers. But there is a reason to believe that they can cover a 9-point spread at home against a team that doesn't have one of the starting defensive backs, against a team that just lost its best running back, and against a team whose quarterback is pretty hobbled. I mean, that line this weekend at 3 and 3.5, you know, most people I know, if they could get the hook, they were taking the Chiefs. The Chiefs were the I took them in the Super Contest. Oh, God, it's so close. And they were the one game I won this weekend. You know, in the weekend I needed to kill it, they were the one team that brought it home for me.
Yeah, I choked down the stretch in the Super Contest. I went 4-6. I had some bad beats, though.
Who?
The Niners blowing the 21-point lead.
Yes.
The Jets getting the cheap touchdown to cover by a point, all that crap. It was never my year this year. I think I finished 11 games over 500, and I don't feel good about it.
I haven't gone back to look. I knew I was like, I felt like I needed to go 5-0 yesterday. I had like 44, 45 wins going into Sunday. I kept saying to my wife all day, it's a big day, honey. Big day. This is money time. And at the end of the day, like by halftime, I thought I was going 5-0. And then of course I ended the day 1-4 because everything went against me. And it didn't matter because I would have had 50 if I went 5-0. And I think to finish in the money, you had to have 51 this year.
Oh, so it didn't matter anyway.
It didn't matter.
I finished at 47. Although I guess 5-0 would have gotten me to 51, but not my year. What do you get a sense from the guys that you're talking to? What game are they kind of waiting on? Because these guys lurk. They're like coyotes. They're just in the woods lurking, waiting for a little baby deer to stay behind and then jump on it. And they usually do this either on Saturday morning or Sunday morning. Who are they lurking? Who's the coyote team this year?
Well, you mean throughout the rest of the playoffs or just for this weekend?
This weekend.
Well, I certainly think that total for the Saints and Lions is something that they're lurking on and they're watching and they're waiting. I think they are desperately waiting and hoping and praying that the Giants end up getting a ton of money come Saturday and into Sunday morning. So the bookmakers are forced to, instead of just adjusting the juice on that Giants -3 number, they actually have to move it and make it Giants -3.5 so they can get the Falcons in that hook, because that is going to be a close game. Talk about two teams that are exactly even. You look at their yards per play, and especially on defense, and it is like mirror images. So, you know, that is only the Giants as 3-point favorites because of the location of the game. And I feel like as soon as that game, if it does get to a hook, then to 3.5, then I think they're going to jump all over the Falcons. I know that's what I would be waiting for. I'd love to see that game get to 3.5. You know, Matt Ryan has had such an interesting year because he has played horribly against teams that are good and played great against the teams that stink. But I do feel like he's built a little momentum these past few weeks. And going into Sunday, it's a good opportunity for him to continue to build on that. And this is a team that is starting to become a little more comfortable and find its rhythm. So at 3.5, I think that'd be it's like getting the Chiefs at 3.5 this past weekend. If you get that extra half point, it's a comfort level.
What if that Broncos line gets to 10.5?
I think if that Bronco line gets to 10, people are going to start buying it back.
Is there a money line? Because, I mean, if you're just looking at pure, I want to put $100 down on a big money line game and hope I get lucky. The money line isn't out yet for the Lions, but they're +11, so I'm going to say they're +400 to win that game. And if they win that game, it's not going to be – they won't be able to do the Super Bowl 42 Giants recipe where they, you know, short, long possessions, run the ball because they don't have the kind of running game. It's going to have to be a shootout. It's going to have to be a ridiculous 41-38 type game. So the move would be to bet the Lions money line under with the over, I feel like, right? And you're going to get like 7-8-1 odds on that.
I'm with you. I'm thinking about it because I'm not.
You're basically betting. I think the Lions are going to win a shootout.
Yep.
And my odds here are +750 or whatever they end up being. I think if these teams played 10 times, I think the Lions can win two in a shootout. So therefore I'm doing this.
Hold on. I'm looking at the money lines right now for the Lions. It's part of what I was looking up. And they're at, +425.
Right. So actually, +425 with the over, that gets you almost to 8-1, I feel like.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just don't believe in the over. I feel like 59, if it gets to that, if it gets to 60, it just feels like that's high. It's high. It's a big number.
Who was the hottest Vegas sharp this year?
I loved this guy, Warren Sharp, on his totals. I just thought his stuff was really, really smart. And so that was interesting to me. Some of the guys that I talked to, they had fair to middling years. Like at the end of the year, I spoke to Brian Leonard, and I like Brian Leonard a lot, and I thought he did a good job. I talked to Teddy a lot during the year, and Teddy Covers, and he was on and off and on and off. So I can't say that anyone stood out to me. But there were guys whose numbers and theories were very interesting to me. There's a guy I talked to called the Sports Boss who I love the way he thinks about it and he analyzes the games. I just think the numbers that he's generating are interesting. Now, in the long run, what's amazing to me and what's always amazing to me about sort of the way all of this is analyzed is that it's not like anybody's doing 60%, you know? It's like whether or not you're doing it from a metrics perspective, whether or not you're doing it from a gut perspective or a system perspective, whatever it is, no one's killing it. Everyone's winning 54%, and that's all anybody can really do. And if anybody can get there, they're making money. And that's really, you know, at the end of the day, that's what matters.
I thought it was a hard year, and I think a lot of it had to do with the injuries. Yeah, you know, there was a stretch – middle of the season where I felt really good and my picks were good. Like I just felt like I had a handle on the league, but it's just so hard with the concussion thing and all these injuries and guys going out and these, all of a sudden the Giants have no linebackers. All of a sudden the Patriots have no D-backs. Like I just felt like it was really hard to kind of get a handle on everything. Like you look at how the second half of the season went, the Saints caught fire. The Dolphins were really reliable last 9 of 10 games, although they didn't cover the last one. Eagles inexplicably caught fire there. Seattle and Arizona caught fire for a few weeks. Denver had their little run. Everybody had like these little 5-6 game runs, and just when you started to believe, they would pull the rug out from under you. Did you get that feeling?
Yeah, I do. I agree. You know, the middle of the season in the pick'em things, I was getting like, there was a run there where I went 4, 5, 8, 4, and 5. And yeah. I just could not, for the life of me, get a handle on any of these teams. But I think there's a difference between the way you and I look at it and the way professionals look at it. And so they're looking at each individual team so closely that they can get a sense statistically of when that team is going to turn and when that team is in a good matchup. And you might feel this way. I know I feel this way. I get that sense about certain teams maybe 4 or 5 times a year where like I've seen enough of a team where I know I see the value immediately in their line and I know this is where I can make a good play on it. But I don't get that about every single team. And I think that's the difference between you and I who are doing other jobs and wise guys who are only doing this is they can find that feeling for every single team. And that's the key. You only get 1, maybe 2 weeks to find the value in the line before the market has caught up and certainly before the odds makers have caught up. And so you need to be able to find that immediately and jump on it. Otherwise you are going to feel like you're playing catch up the entire year.
Here's where both of us get to blame the fact that we had new jobs and that ruined our ability to really throw ourselves into this football season.
It's completely
I will
true.
Have my revenge on football next year.
Next year when I'm in rhythm, this football season is mine.
Yeah. I will say, though, what you just said about how you have a good feeling about certain teams, I do feel that way a little bit about this Houston Bengals line.
You do.
I think it should be at 3.5 or 4. Like, what has this Bengals team done to deserve being 3-point underdogs in a road playoff game?
Well, you're right. And what's interesting is they're a team that is, like, especially lately, has just disappointed. You know, I mean, I think people expected that game with the Ravens to be so much closer than it was. I know I did. And so the fact that they didn't even really make a game of it, that it ended up being as big a margin as it was. And so I think the fact their defense was so good early in the year had people a little bit sort of confused, and they were thinking, all right, this is still the same defense that is doing that. The Jags were one of those teams this year where I had seen them enough. I knew their running game was great. I knew their defense was good. There were going to be games where they kept it closer than what the line actually showed value for. And so the Bengals are the flip side of that. They're not a team that has been showing at the end of the year what they really showed in the beginning of the year.
Do the Sharps bet on the Super Bowl futures, or do they just go game to game?
I mean, they'll bet on the Super Bowl futures in the very beginning of the year. They're not going to take, you know, Green Bay at 7-5 now, or, you know, even New Orleans at 5-1. Like, there's not a lot of value in that. If anyone was taking anything, you know, the Hilton this morning posted the Giants at 25-1. That to me is still value, because the Giants are one of those teams that are so unpredictable. I'd be as not surprised as them losing in the first round as if they won in the Super Bowl. There's no middle ground for me with that team. So I would take the Giants, 25-1. But most of the Sharps, they're betting season win totals. They're not thinking about futures. And so when the futures are at their peak and most valuable, they're also betting the season win totals and paying a lot of attention to that.
Yeah, the Atlanta's 40-1, Lions are 50-1.
Right.
Giants are now 20-1. Niners at 12-1 look like they should have value, but it really doesn't, because you're just if you think they can win the Super Bowl, you're just better off betting it every game.
Right.
The one bet that's always interesting and always just seems to fluctuate like a tech stock in the early 2000s is the AFC NFC Super Bowl line.
I know.
Which is now NFC by 4.5.
Four and a half.
Seems like, if you get that early enough and you have a good inclination, you could really get 4 free points with that line.
Absolutely.
Every year in October.
Yep. You could have gotten a free 1.5 maybe a month ago.
All right, so give me your picks really quick, or did you not have them yet?
No, I could talk. You want my against the spread picks, right?
Yeah, just quick.
Okay, I want I like Houston at -3. I like Detroit if I get double digits, but really I like the under in that game if it gets to, you know, what I think can get to at least 59. I like Atlanta at +3, and I like the Broncos if it gets to plus double digits.
Excellent. So next week when you come back on, find me the one or two Sharps who banged out 4-0 and hit their over-unders, and we can try to get their early picks for round two.
That sounds like an excellent idea.
Chad Millman, good luck with ESPN the magazine in 2012.
Thank you, sir.
And we will talk to you next week.
Talk to you later.
Stay tuned for part two of the Mega Playoff Podcast. We have the All Numbers Edition. Aaron Schatz from FootballOutsiders.com. Bill Barnwell from Grantland.com. Check it out on PodCenter, Grantland.com, iTunes. See you then.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.